Welcome to The Uncensored Pharmacist, where we're rewriting the prescription for health, one candid conversation at a time.
Join us as we delve into the holistic world of well-being, covering everything from the latest pharmacy insights to navigating health regulations and championing patient advocacy.
From in-depth discussions with experts to tips on navigating the pharmacy aisle, we're here to enlighten, educate, and engage.
So make sure to amplify your health journey by subscribing for weekly holistic health insights. Tune in, turn up the volume, and let's get started.
I'm Miranda.
And I'm Rachel. And we're the Uncensored Pharmacist. Welcome back, everybody. Miranda and I are here for episode 3. And we have a topic that we both, I think we're both very passionate about it. So
absolutely.
If you're joining us for the first time, I'm Dr. Rachel. I worked in retail for 10 years and now I have my own business. And Miranda?
I am Dr. Miranda and I am board certified ambulatory care pharmacist. I taught pharmacy school for 9 years and worked in the clinical setting for 10. And now I have my own business as well. And we are the Uncensored Pharmacists. So we would love for you guys to join us every week where we share all of the things that we couldn't tell you at our old jobs.
So true. Oh yeah. My gosh. Yes. So we are definitely uncensored and loving it, right?
Absolutely. Yes. So today we're going to talk a little bit about direct to consumer advertising. And if you don't know what that is, it's a form of advertising or marketing strategy where pharmaceutical companies promote their products directly to the patient or the customer through media channels like television, radio, social media, and other outlets. And direct-to-consumer advertising was actually illegal in the United States until the 1980s. And today, America and New Zealand are the only countries in the world that allow direct-to-consumer advertising.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah.
That is mind-blowing to me.
So it really makes sense to me, though, that it was legalized in the 80s in the United States because that was a time where there was a real push in America for us to start taking a more active role in our overall health. If you think about all the things that were happening right then, Weight Watchers started using celebrity endorsements in the 1980s. It was sort of the rise of the health spa. Everybody was doing aerobics, like that athleisure, athletic wear was a big deal. So there's that real push for people to get control of their health. And how are we going to do that if we don't have more information about diseases and medication? So I kind of understand the idea of direct-to-consumer advertising. It was a really progressive time. It was, we were developing statins for the first time, right? It was the first hepatitis B vaccine, MRI machines. We had the eradication of smallpox. Everybody had a TV in their house for the first time, too.
Yeah, everything was getting fancier. So why not decide this is the time? And I'm sure, I mean, we know how this works. Like, they definitely knew exactly the timing of everything. Like, you just laid out beautifully. Like, they knew what they were doing. And so, but going back to the United States and New Zealand are the only two countries that allow this. When I read that for the first time and heard that for the first time, I'm like, wait a second. What is going on? But it does explain why, like, if you look at our statistics for how much we spend on healthcare as a country, I mean, commercials are definitely not cheap. So that is a huge expense. And that gets, you know, those drug companies are making those commercials, spending that money, and then that cost has to get transferred over to somewhere, right? So that's part of the reason why I think our medications are maybe a little more expensive than other countries as well. So
that's definitely true. And I think I read that about 90% of a drug company's marketing budget is direct to consumer advertising.
Wow.
So the majority of the money that they're spending is not actually educating physicians. It is marketing to the consumer. And whether that's in the radio, TV, print ads, social media, I'm not really seeing it on social media much.
No.
Maybe that's because I'm more on the natural side of things. Maybe there are some restrictions there on social media that I'm not aware of, but I never I don't watch a lot of television, but when I do watch television, there's always going to be a drug commercial. Like, my husband loves sports. If you are watching sports, there's going to be a beer commercial and there's going to be a drug commercial every time, like, no question.
So yeah, I still watch a little bit of the NFL because I have one team that I like, and I was watching the game last Sunday, and who's like sponsoring the game in the NFL? Pfizer.
Wow.
Like,
oh.
Yeah. So it,
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's definitely transferred over into all sports. Like, a little bit, I've gotten disenchanted with sports, and that's another topic, but it is so big. I mean, one of the biggest NFL players that plays right now actually was in a Pfizer commercial. And so it's just very interesting how much they're spending. I mean, when you're sponsoring an athlete to be in your commercials, and that's not, and now that you say
that's
that,
big money, that's big, big money.
And I have seen it actually on TikTok. I have seen the little ad that mm-hmm. now that I'm thinking, and yeah, so it's crazy. It's, I think I saw, and I don't know what year this is from, that spending on prescription drug ads soared to nearly $10 billion a year. But I'm not sure what year that's from. It's just something that a statistic that I wrote down. I don't know. That seems high, but it also, I don't know. It's just there. If you don't watch TV, but I do have a little homework for you, force yourself to watch, like, from maybe the nightly news. So like your local news to the national news. So like start watching at like 5:30 to like 7 o'clock locally at your time. And I'd just be curious, like, how many commercials do you see that are drug related in that period of time? It'd be interesting.
I know we're going to talk about this in a later episode, but I recently watched, oh, there's the two different, Painkiller was on Netflix, so there's no commercials on that one, but Dope Sick was on Hulu, I think, and it's about the opioid, like OxyContin and the rise of the opioid epidemic. And even on this obviously dramatized reproduction of overstepping of pharmaceutical companies, there were commercials for medications on that. And it was just so funny to me. I'm like, this is like kind of like a tell-all dramatization of how pharmaceutical marketing can be so damaging. And yet every time we have a break, there's a commercial for some kind of pharmaceutical product. So you can't really get away from it. If you want a commercial at all, you cannot get away from it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not just it used to be just the news here and there, but now it's every show you watch. I mean, the little bit of TV that I might like be, you know, the TV down in the background or something. And it's every show, any hour of the day. It's just, It's creepy. I find it interesting too that, and we were going over this before we jumped on and started recording, but I said to you, in 1997, the FDA kind of ease their restrictions on direct to consumer. So that's when it really started to, you know, like, oh, okay, so we can really dive in. And that was right around the time that a medication came out that kind of changed the landscape, which is Lipitor, which was, I don't know if it was, it wasn't the first statin, but I think it was the first statin that really everybody, obviously, because it was on commercials, that everybody was like, ooh, if I'm going to take a statin, I want Lipitor, because I saw that on TV. So right. I feel like that's the best one. It's just, it's crazy.
Yeah. I thought Lipitor was the first statin, but it might not have been. Now, a lot of people may not know that statins were actually derived from red yeast rice. So that's been around for forever.
A natural homeopathic remedy. Right.
Product that you could buy over the counter. So the drug company actually took that molecule from the red rice yeast and were able to extract that active molecule and then synthetically create the statin medications that we know now, making them much, much, much stronger, more potent, and of course having more side effects than the natural form. That's a whole nother episode and we want to talk about. But I think Lipitor was, I feel like it was the first one. And if it wasn't, You're right. Maybe I think it's the first one because that's the one that was on television. That's the one that everybody talked about. That was like the one that everybody wanted. And so, the FDA sort of loosened the restrictions on the direct to consumer advertising. And so we started seeing these medications pushed out. And there are people that would argue even to this day that direct to consumer advertising has really promoted innovation. They would say, well, because it creates more competition, these other drug companies are saying, well, the Lipitor people made this and they're pushing it out and it's selling so much that we need to make something better. But what we actually have seen is less innovation, unfortunately. While we've seen this explosion of number of FDA approved drugs, we haven't really seen a lot of advancement. Now, we've seen more advancement in the last 3 years because of COVID than we had in the 15 years previously because of what we were seeing, what we call a lot of Me Too drugs. And so if you're not familiar with what Me Too drugs are, what we call in the industry is somebody, they make statin, they make Lipitor. This is a super popular statin. The generic name for Lipitor is atorvastatin. Well, then we have the development of simvastatin and rosuvastatin and lovastatin. And so you've got all these different drug companies that are taking the same base statin molecule that works the exact same way. And they're creating a similar or a Me Too product that works exactly the same way. And it's being promoted by different drug companies. And they'll do a study and they'll compare it and say, well, mine's so much better. And when you really look at the data, they're not really any better. They all work the same way, but they continue to perpetuate these high prices because they have to continue to charge high prices, even though they've gone to generic, because they're still doing all this research, trying to pretend that their statin's better than this other guy's statins. And they're not. They're the same. And we see this with beta blockers. How many beta blockers are there now? Like 20
ACE inhibitors.
Like, so we're not seeing a lot of innovation in new products to manage these diseases. We're seeing a lot of copies. But then the company will come out and they'll make a new fancy commercial. And they're like, Crestor. Well, Crestor is another statin. It's really not better than Lipitor or any of the other statins that maybe are generic, but it's the new fancy one that's got the commercial. And so that's the one people are asking for. And it really does drive drug prices up. So it actually makes healthcare less affordable for people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everyone wants that drug that's on that commercial where everyone is dancing and it has that catchy little song to it. You know, it was interesting because I was looking at, you know, what it was the rationale behind direct to consumer. Like sometimes you wonder, was it were they really trying to do it? Like, this is going to be a positive thing. Like they were saying, oh, it's going to help, you know, educate and improve health because people are going to think, oh, yeah, you know what? I should probably go to the doctors and have like a physical and check out my heart. You know, is my heart good? Is my cholesterol good? How are my sugars? And they figure it's going to raise awareness about different things. There's going to be less stigma, right? We think about like antidepressants and all the different drugs that are out there now for mood issues, mental health. And the drawback is that you brought it up. People are asking for a medication that they're like, probably don't even need. Or there's a generic that's a third or a quarter of the price, but they're like, no, but I saw that on the commercial. And then your doctor has a coupon for you that, oh, you get your first prescription for free. But then after that, watch out.
Right. So yeah, I think the big difference between empowering people with health information so that they can take control of their health. There's a big difference between empowering them with health information and encouraging them to take control of their health and manipulating people, giving them false hope. Sort of planting the seed sometimes that there's something wrong with them.
Yeah.
Now, and I did look this up. So one study actually showed that direct-to-consumer advertising prompted as many as 27% of patients to make an appointment with their doctor to discuss a condition that they had never even mentioned to their doctor before. Like it wasn't a big enough concern for them to have talked about it during their annual visit. But the commercial prompted them to make an appointment specifically to talk about that condition and ask for that drug. So obviously, direct-to-consumer advertising is working for the drug company. The question is it really working for Americans? Are we seeing better health outcomes because of it? And I think the answer is probably no.
Yeah. Yeah. And that being said, I mean, how many times this, I mean, I used to hear this like, oh, I'm getting this cholesterol med so I can continue to eat the way I always ate. I mean, I'm not I'm not going to change my habits. I love the taste of my food. I love everything about it.
Right.
So it's almost like maybe this was done in good faith. These commercials, like, well, we want people to be more educated and we want it to be in the forefront of people's minds. Like, hey, you know, it's very, you know, X number of people have this condition and maybe you've never thought, maybe you just lived your day to day. And now that you know that this is an actual condition, because it seems like all these new diagnoses, I don't think that's the word, but
diagnoses, yeah.
We're not even in an existence, but now that there's a medication, now we're going to name something that, you know, so it's like I think, okay, this was done in not a such a deliberate way that they knew down the line, like, oh, we're just going to have more diagnosis codes because we're going to have more medications for things that don't exist now, but will exist in 10, you know, so they had this foreshadowing of where it was going to go. You know, you want to think, oh, they just wanted everyone to be more educated. And like, did you though? That's where my brain goes. I don't know where you go, but that's where I
haven't really thought about it that deeply. No, I really haven't. The really, what I have just thought is that they decided, hey, it's a good idea. Let's do this thing. And then a lot of people never really thought about the snowball effect. They didn't really think about how it was going to affect it. And maybe they did. Maybe someone somewhere was like, we're going to do this and it's going to change the way we practice medicine in America. But I don't know. I sometimes think that we do things and then we don't really realize what a huge impact it's going to have downstream. But if you think about prior to Lipitor, prior to the 80s, and that big explosion of medical information that we had right up until that. I mean, we didn't even have antibiotics until what, the 1940s, something like that. I mean, we've had this huge, like, there was this huge progression in advancement in medical sciences. And then we got to start doing these Me Too drugs. And then we sort of slowed everything down for a little while. And then we've had this other big push over the last couple of years. I don't know where I was going with
that. I think it's such, well, and you brought up a good point, even with just with your daughter, like there was a toy that she didn't even know she needed. And then she saw a commercial and she's like, I absolutely want one of those. And you're like, do you even know what that is? And you're like, no.
Right.
Like a beautiful example that you shared, you know, off the cuff before we jumped on.
So the whole purpose of advertising is really to create a desire for a thing.
Yep.
And a thing that you never knew that you wanted because you never knew that it existed. Yes. So what I was telling you is like my kids, my daughter had never even heard of Polly Pocket. Polly Pocket's been around since the 80s. I remember Polly Pocket.
Oh yeah.
My daughter tells me she wants a Polly Pocket for Christmas. I'm like, where did you learn about Polly Pocket? Well, apparently there's they have a cartoon on YouTube now, but she saw an ad for it. Is she she has never watched the show. She does not have any friends that have them. She did not know it existed, but she saw a commercial for it. And it created that feeling of lack. Like, I don't have this.
Yeah.
And I someone else has it and I don't have it and I need it. And
yep.
So she didn't have that feeling of lack or that feeling of need. She didn't know that it existed. And so it's very much that way with these medications as well. In that, and granted, I mean, there are people that are living in pain, that are living with like severe health symptoms, and they see something on television and they're like, oh my goodness, that might be the answer to my problem. And I think what is frustrating to me is that oftentimes it's not, because like I said, a lot of times it is a Me Too drug. It's the same thing in a prettier package or a more expensive package.
Subscribe to our podcast for weekly episodes where we'll bring you unfiltered and unbiased information about all things health, from debunking common myths and misconceptions to sharing insider knowledge on pharmaceuticals and the most innovative nutraceuticals and alternative therapies on the planet. We've got you covered.
Now, I pulled some statistics. Advertising, like I said, it creates like an emotional response. Like you see that thing and you're like, oh, I need that. I don't have that. Someone else has it. I want it. So it's really an emotional response. It's not a logical thing. But a study conducted by Johns Hopkins University that was published in JAMA earlier this year highlighted some statistics about direct-to-consumer advertising that I thought was really interesting. Companies with inferior drugs, so not as effective, or less effective than competitor drugs, than the leading product, okay? Spent nearly 15% more on advertising. Means that they got more exposure and more prescribing than the superior drug. So there's a rule that says that if you have a crappy drug, you can't advertise it. You can have a crappy drug and you can spend more on advertising than the better drug. And people are going to ask their doctor for it. And the doctor's going to prescribe the crappy drug. And the person is going to have worse health outcomes. So what we see is overprescribing and inappropriate prescribing, which leads to unnecessary prescriptions, unnecessary side effects, possible drug interactions. And with every 1.5% increase in ad spending, that leads to a 10% increase in drug sales in that drug. And we have more advertising of inferior drugs than we do of superior drugs. So there's no rule that says if you have a crappy drug, you can't advertise it. In fact, you can, and you can spend more on it and you can sell more, even though it's not as good as the other drug. As long as you don't lie and say that your drug is better than or as good as, you can't lie and say that your drug is better, but people aren't asking that question. People don't know to ask that question.
No, and because they don't even know what drug perhaps it even is going against, right? They're like, oh, well, I don't care about that. And I saw too, I mean, the drawback of these commercials is that it promotes meds before any maybe long-term studies have been done. You know, it gets them out really hard, really fast from the moment that they're approved, because they have to be approved. But I mean, there's some great generic drugs out there, but you're not going to see them spending money on commercials for generics.
Right. And I go live almost every night on TikTok, and I answer a lot of questions. And one of the questions I get asked is, do you use generic or do you use brand? We use generic. And I get asked questions about, well, what do you think about this new drug that just came out? If there was a deadly situation, if we're talking about cancer, if we're talking about a terminal illness, okay, and we're progressing towards death or death is imminent, use that brand new drug. Use that new drug that just came out. But when it comes to my family, I'm not going to use a new drug until it's been out for 7 years. And that's because most people don't realize that just because a drug has been FDA approved doesn't mean that we're done researching it. That first 7 years, we're still collecting post-marketing data because we've studied it on a really healthy population. We've studied it on a very small unhealthy population, but it isn't until we start marketing it to the masses in that first 6 or 7 years that we start getting data on everybody. And so we start getting all these weird side effects that we didn't see in that smaller study that we did before it was FDA approved. So that first 7 years, I'm going to be using the generic that's been around for forever. We know what to expect from that. I'm not trying anything new. I'm not going to tell anybody that I care about to try anything new unless it's, like I said, unless there's a terminal illness involved. That first 7 years is still kind of sketchy in my opinion.
Yeah, 1,000%. I agree. It's just a way for the drug companies to make some fast money. They invest in the commercials and then they're like, all right, so go to your doctor and ask your doctor for this medication. And we're going to get to that part of the other side of, you know, what happens after these drugs are out and the doctors are maybe pressured to follow suit. So,
yeah. And we're going to do another podcast soon. Actually, our next podcast, we're going to talk about things that actually affect how prescribers prescribe, like selecting the medication, because I think that's a whole nother thing. Prescribers most definitely all feel pressure from their patients to prescribe certain things. And there's also because we don't call them kickbacks, because kickback's a bad word, but the way that doctors are incentivized now, there are surveys that patients have to complete and doctors get paid better if they have better surveys. And so if the patient leaves happy and they complete a survey and they give them better marks, then the doctor gets paid better. And so there's really sort of a push for the doctor to just sort of do whatever the patient wants. And I know that there are plenty of doctors that don't do that, and they get real frustrated when people come in and they already know what they want. And I am absolutely an advocate of people understanding their illness, researching different ways to manage that, making lifestyle modifications, and not just putting 100% faith in their doctor, but also don't put 100% faith in that advertisement that you saw on television either. At the end of the day, that drug company is trying to make money. And your doctor said, we're all trying to make money. We all have to have money. We all have the money to survive.
Yeah. That's always a reminder that I share with people. Like, just remember that this whole system is a for-profit business. And to do your research, because nobody's going to look out for you as much as you look out for you. So definitely, I agree with Miranda. Like, do your homework, do your research. You know, don't put all your eggs in, my doctor's going to take care of it for me, you know, or, you know, whoever is going to take care of all of that stuff for me. No, you have to really do your due diligence and be prepared.
If that on all of the drug commercials, it says talk to your doctor about. If it starts a conversation with your doctor about something that you should have talked to your doctor about a long time ago, then good. If your doctor says, well, that's not really the best option, this has better data, or I've had better results with this, or what do you think about this? I would just say to be open-minded to that, because there are so many different options out there. And so often the medications are incredibly similar. And science is fluid. What we know today is not necessarily what we knew 3 months ago or 6 months ago or a year ago.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And if you listen to enough healthcare providers and doctors and pharmacists and nurses, you're going to get a lot of, you know, everyone's like, trust the science. I'm like, yeah, but that person told me this and that person told me this. You got to go with what feels, you know, like use your brain, use your gut instinct, and, you know, because you're going to get a lot of advice, but really go with what feels right to you and what makes sense for your pocketbook, what makes sense for your lifestyle. And yeah, we're here to empower you. We're trying to give you information to maybe help you say, you know, I never have heard this before. I'm going to go do some of my own research. And that's what we really, our goal is to say, you know, don't trust us, go look it up. And then as time goes on and you realize, okay, these chicks know what they're talking about. Then you know that we're here as like a voice from, you know, inside the trenches. Like, that's our goal, is to give you a behind, like the Wizard of Oz, behind the curtain, what's really going on.
So there are a couple of really great drug resources that you can use to go and look up information. I follow a doctor on TikTok, and he does more comedy skits than he does medical things, but he talks about using Google. We call it Dr. Google, just as a joke. My dad says Dr. Well, I ask Dr. Google. But there is a side of Google that is specific to medical and health research and like that peer reviewed literature, and it's Google Scholar. And you can just go into your search bar and type in Google Scholar, and it will pull up. It looks just like Google, but it pulls up a piece of Google that's just the research. Yeah. And you can go in there and you can type in your question, and it'll pull up the research. And we learned, it took us years to learn to actually read a journal and make sense of it. Okay. Don't go and try to read the whole journal. If you're looking though for information and you're getting mixed information on regular Google, go to Google Scholar and type in whatever your question is, and it'll pull up some abstracts, and you can read those abstracts. An abstract literally is a summary of a medical article. So if you want to read about, like, I talk a lot about probiotics being used for mental health, you can go into Google Scholar and you can type in probiotic and depression. And there'll be 200 articles that come up about that topic. And you can literally read two paragraphs, which is a summary of each of those articles. You don't have to be able to read every article and make sense of every little statistic that's in there. But if you're looking for information, you're not sure who to trust, and you're not sure if you're reading on blogs and you're getting mixed information, go straight to the source. Go straight to the source, and then you can see what has been published. And sometimes they're even what you read in the medical literature doesn't all go together. And so at least then you would have gone to the source and been like, okay, well, at least it's being studied. And the answer is they don't know yet.
Yeah, it's all about being educated and realizing that what you see on TV is not all it's cracked up to be, even the commercials. I mean, there's just so many. And I use, like, I know some people maybe don't use Google anymore for multiple reasons. I use DuckDuckGo as a search engine because I know sometimes people have, they're wondering, oh, is like Google swayed one way or another? If you want to go to another source to back up the source that Miranda just talked about, go to DuckDuckGo and do a search on there and find that study and, you know, make sure that it says what it did in the other spot. Like, it always back up what you're going to look at and read. Like, you're like, okay, I see it there, but I want another source. Like, there's nothing wrong with getting a second opinion. So just, this is your health. This is your life. And don't leave it up to chance. I mean, you just got to spend some time instead of scrolling on social media, spend some time on researching your health and what you need to do to improve it. So,
right. Another good resource that is not looking at that raw scientific data. If you want to look at something that's a really nice summary, you go to medscape.com. Yep. Medscape is an unbiased source that you can go to, and you can type in the name of the drug that you're looking at, and you can get side effects and drug interactions and dosing information and lots of good information there. That's a really easy to read information. Yep. As well. And you can always ask your doctor or your pharmacist, but you also have to keep in mind that our brain can only hold so much information. And so I get asked a lot of questions I don't know the answer to, and I go to my reliable sources and I look those things up. I'm not ever going to just guess on something if I don't know the answer. So give your doctor and your pharmacists and your nurses and your other healthcare practitioners a little bit of grace, because there are so many different medications out there. It's okay for them to look it up. It's not okay for them to just guess.
Yeah. No, that's such a good point. Well, this was so good. I hope all of you got value from this. Well, yeah, definitely continue to check out our podcast and future podcasts, and find us on social media. We'll share that like in the notes of this episode, where you can find us and check out our content, check out who we are, and stay tuned for some really good episodes coming down the line. So thank you all for tuning in and listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Subscribe to our newsletter and join our community. We are dedicated to empowering individuals with the most up-to-date information on healthcare, wellness, and patient advocacy.
Plus, as part of our community, you'll have access to exclusive content, expert Q&A sessions, and special promotions.
Ready to take charge of your health? Join the movement for a healthier, more informed you by following us on social media. We're here to give you the raw, uncut truth on healthcare and wellness, and we can't wait to have you join us on our journey. Tune in, subscribe, and let's start revolutionizing the way we think about health together.
See you next week for another episode of The Uncensored Pharmacist. Until then, stay healthy, informed, and uncensored. Diagnosis is, I don't think that's the word, but diagnosis.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.